Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello, everybody.
Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Yo.
And Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody.
And we have a studio guest.
We do, here in Austin, Texas. A longtime contributor to this show is one James Harrison. Hey, James.
Goddamn correct. James Harrison.
Hey, James, back of your head.
For the uninitiated, if you're a longtime listener to the After Things podcast, James has sent in a number of really good questions that we've given marginal advice, and he has tried some and brought back feedback. But James was in town for Magic Live, so he hung around for DEF CON, and now it's like, well, I mean, you're already here in the United States. Might as well come on down to Austin. And so we're hoping to shoot some Modern Rogue and some Scam Nation stuff. But since half of all the best questions that we have came from James, it's like, hey, James, what do you got for us? And then James is like, kind of out of questions. Got nothing. So he went to his friends. Advice,
guys. Well, you guys solved all my problems. I'm a millionaire now. So I'm like, what am I going to do?
But actually, I'm here to complain about.
Some of this stuff hasn't been working. And quite frankly, on Weird Things, there has not been enough goblin talk. I wanted to bring up my grievances.
Okay, some feedback.
Hey, man. Blame the goblins. They're the ones failing to make the news.
Look, I'm here for some of the other cryptids, but the goblin thing I think ran a natural course as soon as we realized that they were a cultural euphemism for rapists.
Oh, very much so. Very much so.
What a journey, though. So you asked your friends, what are the questions you would love to ask the guys who presumed to give advice about this stuff?
Yeah, I went through, I asked a bunch of my friends, thank you for helping me, and the one that sort of really stuck out was this one, and it was ask them what their end goal is.
Oh, you know what's funny is you are saying end goal now, but when you told me this earlier, what I heard is what's their angle?
Oh, sorry.
And I thought I liked what's their angle because it implied that the whole very idea of doing a podcast where we give advice is somehow almost certainly what's the vig here? Like, what's the scam, right? I almost like that better.
No, I kind of actually do too.
Okay,
we'll go Chinese whispers on that.
All right. So, gentlemen, what's your angle?
Oh, like what do I get out of this?
Yeah. The Weird Things podcast, supporting independent podcasters, people who want to be, you know, variety artists of all types. What's your angle?
I guess if I were to really put a fine point on it, like I really like talking and this many other varieties of my life provide me an opportunity to do it and to hone it and get better. But as for advice, I don't know. I mean, I think that there is for me a almost religious sense. I loathe and despise zero sum thinking. Like if you were to identify a thing that I hate the most, that is like systemic, that is something that if we were better at it, the world would immediately become a better place on all these other little strands that I believe run from it. That is a thing that I believe in, and part of that is putting my money where my mouth is in a lot of different areas, including publishing sales data and like doing the how to lose $40,000 talk, and on a personal level, like with Night Attack, like talking about embarrassing things in my own life or things that culturally are you wouldn't or shouldn't say about yourself or revealing your true feelings about things. And so this is kind of the business focused element of it. If we have gotten number one, I guess on some level it is also self-gratifying to know that like somebody would give a rat's ass what the hell I had to say. But on the other level, it's like, hey, look, I just want this to be normalized. Like I've always believed that we are all better the more we all help each other and share stuff. And the the instinct to not do that, the instinct to protect, the instinct to keep secret, can be damaging.
Yeah. I have thoughts, but Andrew?
You know, I had a really neat conversation Saturday, and I mentioned my other podcast, with Marcus Eddy. Marcus is an amazing magician and magic creator. He's worked with David Blaine. He's currently working with Justin Willman on Willman's show, Magic for Humans. And Marcus is on last week on Penn and Teller, Fool Us and Fooled Them. And every time I get together with Marcus, it's kind of like I'm the slightly older guy telling you, like, well, this is what I've learned, this is what I think, and whatever, and, you know, this is my thoughts on stuff, you know, and he's, you know, I've learned a lot of really cool magic from him, and I'm always telling him, like, well, maybe about this. What if you tried this? What if you did this, in kind of a career sort of sense? And it's kind of, and I always sort of start off like, I don't want to speak out of place, but I'm like, you know, whenever I talk to people who kind of get it, these are the questions I want, the things I want them to tell me, you know, and we have, you know, great conversations, because I feel like, you know, I'm kind of, he's sort of at where I was a few years ago, going, what do I do with this? What do I do with this? And answering the question about the show is sort of the same thing. It's like, why do I do this? You know, I will sit down with anybody who wants to talk about books if I've got 20, 30 minutes and tell them everything I know about it. And I think I subscribe to Justin's thought that, like, I do think competition is real, but it's much rarer than we realize. And to worry about it when you don't need to is counterproductive, when there's a lot more to be gained from collaborating and whatnot, you know. And I've benefited so much from people who could have looked at me as competition but actually didn't and helped me out. But I guess the doing that feels good, because I guess, like, for me, it's, I want to put order into the world, and I maybe naively believe that my opinions and my what I think is my expertise help do that, you know, putting things in order, I guess.
Can I make a supposition or speculation? Here's what I think, is that at some level we're all narcissists, and what I perceive we're up to is, when we were in our 20s just getting started, we detected that there was a lot of BS in a lot of the, you should do this, you should do that, and a lot of bad advice or whatever. And at some level, because spoiler alert, we're not exactly making bank on this show, but what we get is all of us and every episode feeling a little bit lighter, like we're carrying a little bit less of a burden, because we're saying the things that we wish we were flatly told from experienced professionals, mm-hmm, 20 years ago. It's a little bit of going to confessional, I feel like.
Sure. And I think that's true. And, like, I try to separate ego, to say what I still do it if ego wasn't a factor. You know, like, and that's because I ask myself that a lot. Like, am I doing this because, not that ego is always wrong, but, like, am I doing this because it satisfies my ego, or is it doing it because my innate sense of how to add value to the world, I guess, you know?
Which in that Ayn Randian kind of thing is, like, nobody does anything truly altruistically. We all derive a fairly significant sense of, you know, joy and lightness for having told the truth.
I think it's that the prior, like hypothetically, if you were at a restaurant last week and you saw a guy wearing a Korean War veteran hat, and you realized he found out he's a regular there, and you wanted to buy him a gift card, you know, I think if you tried to do that as anonymously as possible and have the staff give them to him, you know, that sort of tells you, okay, it's not about you looking like a hero in front of this person or whatever. It's about your own sense of, okay, I'm doing something and contributing something good.
Right.
You know, and that's the difference. It's like, also, there's like YouTube philanthropy and stuff, which some of it I think is good, but some of it is like this, no, that somebody wants to look good doing something for somebody. And some of it just is gross to me. It's like you didn't inspire anybody to do that. You made yourself a hero of a story that didn't need a hero, you know, but sometimes it does help, you know. But, and I guess, like, a show like this, I always think about this. Am I doing it because I want to hear myself talk? Am I doing that right now? Or because I want to help? So I'll just shut up.
I mean, I do genuinely want to help. Like, I do know that. Like, and I'm not going to parse exactly what's under the hood there. because if people like it, then that's cool. Then that means that there's a relationship and hopefully people are getting something out of it, or at the very least, because also it's like, I wouldn't really necessarily, unless you're giving awful advice or you are asking people to take unnecessary risk, or, you know, I think we are all very focused on, like, have the big idea, but then also focus very deeply on the micro steps 1 through 3.
But,
right. Like,
But also, I feel like we genuinely, for whatever reason, the three of us are sort of born without that mystique-seeking engine. Whatever that celebrity aha-ness, the it factor, whatever, seems to hold no appeal for all three of us. And we're like we have. It appears to be fairly rare for three people currently trying to make it in the entertainment biz to say, yeah, look, you're going to be tempted to think this awesome thing is the way it is, but it's not. So stop that. It looks more like this. And I don't see that very often anywhere else.
Yeah. You know, part of it's hard to evaluate, because once you have a thing, you can say, you really, this thing isn't that important. But it's like, you know, I'm tall. If I was shorter, you know, would I tell a shorter version of me, like, being tall is not that great, whatever. It's like, well, you're tall. You get the experience of that. And, like, success is kind of like that. You know, you get even, like, you know, went to the Magic Castle last night for a chili cook-off. Okay. That's a story unto itself. I like the fact that people come up to me and go, oh, saw the Shark Week thing, heard about the Shark Week thing and all this. That's why I did it. I love sharks. Let me make that very clear. I love sharks, but I did it for the ego part. I did it for people to go, oh, that's a cool thing you did. You know, not because primarily. I mean, I love sharks. It's a research thing I'm very interested in. But
look, we get it. You secretly hate sharks. That's fine.
Well, no, all right. So with the Shark Week thing, rank these three, like, career and business interests. And so, like, the business element of your career, if I'm on television now, I will have more options, not only on television, but also with books or anything else. The straight out ego of having people say, oh my God, you're great. So separate those two out. And then your love for shark research. Rank those three.
I mean, my love for doing research or something scientifically is extremely high, but that goes back into ego too, my sense of value and putting order into the world. Like, if I feel like, hey, I've done a cool thing, that's a neat thing, then I feel good about myself, sort of thing. So that's tied into there. I would, you know, it's probably a split or divided among all of them, to be honest with you. I mean, I think that the business reason was a very, very big thing. I chose this thing because it served my goal. And I think that getting to, you know, the other question of what's your goal, for me, it's like, I have an interest in science and technology. And so all of my projects that I do, I take on, outside of just my regular writing, tend to push towards there. But even my writing is, my characters are all critical thinkers who love science and things like this. And so I try to write like that. So I certainly have a career direction, which I go in towards, like, things that are more of this, that put more of this into the universe, are things I will do.
That actually opens the door to, now that I find out that I misheard the question to begin with, the real question, what's your end game, which is fascinating, because we talk about beginnings, because obviously the three of us were midway through this journey. We're all figuring stuff out, and we do have advice on the best way to begin and where to go. But I don't even know for a fact that all three of us have a clear vision of our end game. Do any of you guys, have you figured out what it looks like?
I don't know. And I think it's probably hurt my career. I think I've spent a lot of time keeping things afloat that maybe if I had, I have had over the last year, I think, a clearer idea of what I generally like doing, and matching that and aligning that with what makes money has been cool. But yeah, I don't know. I think that there is still some element, even though I've always tried to be realistic about, like, not wanting the world to just, you know, trying to not fall for that seductive element of, like, well, someday, you know, Mr. Monopoly is going to come down in a hot air balloon and recognize all my talent and say, hey, congratulations. The dream you never realized was your dream is now your reality. But I think at times I can bury myself in enough work where I'm like, well, all right, I'll just keep doing this thing that I'm doing in the day to day and then worry about it later. So yeah, I don't think I have at least nothing that I could put into words.
At the lowest part of my depression, you know, dealing with that kind of happens in your late 20s of that, like, oh my God, what do I do? And staring up at the ceiling fan, watching it spin, like, man, what a cliche moment, but still.
What a cliche. I hope I'm not a writer who's famous 20 years from now who relies on such a cheap cliche as he sets up a scene. But don't worry, that won't happen. I'm in my 20s. I'm sure I'll become a great writer.
I remember being, my 20s, just sitting there going, like, what am I going to do? I realized I was a flake. I mean, you think I'm flaky now. I was a real flake. I mean, I just never finished things. I never finished projects. That was problem number one. I said, I could have all the ambition in the world, but if I've never finished anything, it won't matter. But I said, okay, let me get down to the core. What am I? Because, like, I went through a period, like, I spent a year reading every biography I could. I read Walt Disney biographies. I read Steve Jobs biographies about before he came back to Apple. Okay. I mean, I read, like, everything I could. And I had that mistaken assumption that somewhere I'll find the blueprint for me. Wasn't in any of them. And that's the thing, is they at some point stopped looking for that blueprint and they just started doing the things they wanted to do. And for me, it was like, what do I like to do? And I said, I like to be creative. I like to have traction. I like to see my creativity having traction in the world. You know, being successful is great, but the thing that if I had a choice between, you know, being a bored billionaire or being a financially independent person that could wake up every day and do what I wanted to do, I'll be that financially independent person waking up every day doing what I want to do. Because I've met bored billionaires. I've met people like that who you can't say money doesn't solve everything. But no, there are a lot of problems that a lot of people have that money will solve those. But then you get to the next set of problems, which few of us are equipped to solve. And so for me, it was, if I can wake up every day and be creative, you know, and I can feel, have a little bit of security and traction, then I will be a very happy person.
So,
and build.
To the question of what's your end game, if I were to guess, I know that around 5 years ago, I guess 10 years ago, I started to recognize that, you know, the treadmill of doing live gigs was problematic because that story usually ends with you being 68 years old and genuinely confused why nobody is booking you for any shows. And so instead, I pivoted my focus to building little engines that would at least keep the lights on and keep my kids going to college and all of that stuff. And I feel like I watched the same thing with you, Andrew, when it came to it's a fairly drastic pivot for your career when you go from a cruise ship magician to an inventor of magic tricks and then realize that both of those don't make as much money while you're asleep as writing novels does, and then just realize, well, I guess I'll just write novels because that does make money while I'm asleep. And I feel like you have been a really good steward. It's been really fascinating over the last 10 years to watch you build all of these engines, each one that, you know, designed to continue to provide money when you're 90 years old. And I feel like I'm following in your footsteps, trying to do that with different brand properties.
You know, the funny part was, and it wasn't that I realized until 2 years ago, that my primary source of income, though, had been investing.
Ha!
And that was the thing I didn't realize, was that was a thing I was better at than anything else I did. And that was a thing that got me through, you know, lean periods and other periods like that. Cause I look back, what was the most stable form? And that's, sometimes you have to sit back and say, what is your business plan? And I realized, oh, my business plan is I make a lot of money at a certain point and then I squirrel it away and then live off of that until the next point, you know, and do that. And I've been lucky in the things now that I've been doing, you know, have been very good, but that was sort of a big reality for me, was how much of, you know, me was just making smart decisions at several points.
I feel like that moment of pivoting and deciding to become good at, I don't think it's dramatic for me to say you didn't start off as good of a novelist as you are now, but that decision to invest a decade to become a good novelist was really... the delightful thing is it sort of reset the time counter back to square one, because now you have a 40-year runway. Your best work almost certainly is years and years ahead of you. Whereas in magic, that you know, you could say, well, based on my age, my size, my athleticism or whatever, it would be harder to expect my best magic show to be ahead of me.
Yeah, no, I meant literal investing was a thing that really helped me. But when it comes to investing in my time and stuff, as I've gotten older, I'm much better at figuring out. Like, I was very lucky with writing that I went from, it was from the day I said I'm going to do it, it was 2 years later that I had a book deal and meetings with directors and stuff about what to do. And it was a wonderful, magical time. But part of it was, having spent so much time wasting time, I knew, well, if I'm going to take this seriously, I know what not taking it seriously looks like. I got to do the opposite of that, which was, you know, it was a year of writing. Like, you know, they talk about, oh, you got to write your first million words before you're really good. I'm like, great, I'm going to write a million words in a year, you know?
Got him.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a thing that you can keep getting better at. But to anybody, my advice, though, I will talk about the investing thing. That's the thing that Brian brought up, like in magic, because I realized, yeah, they're entertainers who they're doing really well, and they keep thinking that next big break is going to be the thing that's really going to make them financially secure. And then all of a sudden they find out that, like, yeah, nobody wants to hire Wieners the Clown anymore, you know, and, you know, you're like, now what? And I saw a lot of entertainers, friends, people I thought were extremely talented that reached that point. And that made me super paranoid. So I was always like, put money away, you know, do this.
I always think of it as a money bicycle. At some point, you spend your most active years as an artist designing a money bicycle, and then you hop on and you pedal, and you realize the faster you pedal, the more money comes out of the money bicycle. And many people, friends, just assume that, well, I could keep pedaling. As long as I'm pedaling, I'm good. And then at some point, the money bicycle puts out less money, and they're all genuinely surprised. I'm like, I don't want to do that. I want a money engine.
Well, and it's like, I look at my own stupid behavior where it's like, I'll make more money, so I'll spend more money, you know? And, you know, I think about the time when I was deciding between LA and Florida, and I kept a house in Florida for several years. I liked the fact that, I own real estate there, but it wasn't being used. It wasn't being Airbnb'd, and it was an ego sort of thing. And that cost, you know, and I look at, you know, I've seen that, you know, when we first started, you know, the iTricks business, you know, we had one warehouse, and I'm like, oh, the next warehouse next door is open. Let me go rent that warehouse too. I could have just cleaned up the place. And it's dumb things, you know. And I think, you know, I look at that, you know.
Yeah, but there's also something to the fact that all of those experiences in some weird way contributed to where you're at right now. So I let me say this much. To answer your question, James. I don't know what any of our end games are, but I think that we're all unified in firmly saying whatever our end games are, we're all already very aware that they're wrong, that they're all wrong, and that we're already pre-comfortable with whatever alternate things happen instead.
I know I love tech. Like, I mean, I literally, you know, the thing that got me inspired, excited the most was to sell a TV special about me doing something really cool tech and then doing stuff with that. You know, like, I before the podcast, after the podcast, I'm going to open up my code editor and work on, you know, any of a half dozen projects I'm working on that are, I ask myself, like, what's the goal of these things? And they're not schemes like I used to sort of have. They're like, what's a thing that I can create that could be useful to other people and myself? What's the best idea I have right now? You know, and I don't know what that is.
Yeah. Also, for the record, we're not defensive. You're defensive.
Yeah.
Shut up. Shut up, idiot.
What's your goal, James?
Yeah. You want to push me around? You think you're better than me?
Yes, but that's beside the point. Listen, you're going to throw it up there. I'm going to take advantage of it. But the three things that I got from it was basically that learn to invest your money, get really happy that you might be living in an RV at Walmart parking lots, and this is feeding your superiority complex. Got it. Nice.
Also, make sure to buy a VR rig.
There, yeah. Am I close?
Yeah. No, that totally tracks.
Yeah, makes sense.
No, I love the answers that I got, actually. I was like, yay, they're not quite sure, but they're confident, and it looks like they're going in the right direction, because I like where it's going. So,
well, I'm going to say that, like, for all the creatives out there, and again, I don't want to sound like, you know, some TV financial person, like, let me tell you, but like, the more creative and risk taking you are, the more you want to think about, I got into TV and was able to do what I did because one, I talked my best friend into coming in and help run my business when I was out in Hollywood trying to, you know, smooth my way into things. Two, because, you know, when that business wasn't always doing so great, not because of him. Let me make that very, very clear. What?
Oh, no. No. We all get it.
I mean, it was partially because money I'd saved and put away allowed me to go do that. You know, you see people who, you know, people want to come out to, you know, make it into business and to spend time, takes time and a lot of energy, and you do things that you do not get rewarded for years sometimes, you know. So, you know, having that kind of, you know, security, or I'm one, not caring, but two, security helps.
Very cool. So we have a bit of a time crunch this episode. Do we have any more picks, or?
I want to know what James' goal is, though.
Yeah. What's your goal? James? What's your end game? Yeah,
normally, we just talk about your question.
Yeah. And what's your angle?
It's an email, but you go now. Answer now.
How does it feel?
Go.
How does it feel?
Go.
Thank you. That's just it. That's kind of the thing that threw me off when I asked my friends, like, "What's your end goal? What's your angle?" I don't know. Like, I wanted to just be an entertainer. I thought it would be fun, and now 10 years later. As a professional, I'm like, yeah, that's probably something I should look at.
No, and my advice is always figure out what you hate. What you hate is more important than what you love. So in your case, like, I know, for me, I met those 65-year-old old timers in the variety circuit, and I was very upset by watching them convince themselves that the kids had changed and that the world had changed and that it wasn't their fault and that they were entitled to keep working the way they did 40 or 30 years ago. And I realized I hated everything about that delusion that they were building in their mind. And I realized I would never, ever, ever let me become that old carny who sold themselves the lie that the market has changed. And instead I would figure out, why are they there and how can I never find myself in that place? So whenever you're trying to pick from a buffet, it's hard to pick what you like, but it's pretty easy to pick what you hate. And that was the thing that drives most of the decisions I made over the last 10 years.
I like it.
That's fine. You know what? My value as a person is not determined by your approval.
Yeah,
my name is Dan Harmon.
But that
that's Justin's job, guys.
Yeah, I'm the only one that can validate Brian's ego.
So, all right, any picks at all?
The Boys. It's great.
You can't pick The Boys 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah, no, but you know who can? Is James on his very first pick. Hey, what's your pick, James?
Well, now I feel like I have to say it's The Boys. But I absolutely loved it. I mainlined it last night because I didn't want spoilers from Brian. It's like, did you see this episode? I'm like, no, shut up.
Nope, smart
That's
move.
Right.
Also, yeah, my pick is DEF CON. Everybody should go to DEF CON. It's great.
DEF CON's great. And you want to know what? I got a chance to meet Jack Reciter from Darknet Diaries, and he was a very pleasant young man. And he is very rarely do you meet people that you only know their voice, and they look similar to how you would think. And I don't know if I had an idea of what his face would look like, but he was exactly as skinny as I thought he would be.
Well, what's funny is he showed up last year. He was very much wearing a Darknet Diaries t-shirt. And I'm just like, that's got to be Jack Reciter, I assume. But this year, you know, he's getting a little more discreet. So he had sunglasses on. And I'm like, not fooling me. That's definitely Jack Reciter. Only he's cool enough to wear sunglasses this year.
No, it was cool because he he went to go meet with Darren, or I ran into Darren from our friend from Hack 5. And I've been telling Darren, like, dude, this is a great show that kind of explains InfoSec in a very relatable, normal way.
Oh,
you should be sponsoring
like buying advertising for you in general is dumb because you already own the market share in the group of people that are buying all your products. But like, if you were going to experiment with ads on anything, it should be on that show, because it is a great, like, for people who aren't in the community or aren't in InfoSec but are fascinated by it. And those are the kind of people that are going to be like, oh, cool, I could spend some money and buy one of these gizmos. So Darren literally brings him over to the Hack 5 booth to just say, this is my friend Justin who keeps telling me to advertise on your show. So, like, it's, I mean, a sweet moment, but kind of embarrassing that it's like, hey, let me bring, like, oh, Goofy's your favorite character at Disney World. Look who's here. Goofy's here. But then he knew who I was, so I was immediately validated that he knew me from Night Attack, because he had seen you on Night Attack.
He's a genuinely awesome guy and really good friend, and I'm so happy for his success, and his show is so deserving of all of the popularity it's achieving.
Yeah, and I'm glad he's at DEF CON, because that's like 90% of the episodes that involve the talk at DEF CON, so it makes sense.
I'll do a pick. 2 Minute Papers. It's a YouTube channel. Really, really good. A lot of great stuff on there. I forget who did. I just backed him on Patreon. He finds pretty good science papers, a lot of it artificial intelligence stuff, and kind of breaks it down into 2 or 3 minutes. And they're very digestible, really informative. So 2 Minute Papers is a great, great, great. It's smart. It's just that we're living this wonderful age of dedicated people creating content like this, like Scott Manley's Rocket Reports and stuff, which are really well done. The guy who does Defunct Land, you know, those are just, these things are great. And it's glad to see that these things are now businesses where people can keep making these things.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I got a quick pick.
Nobody asked you,
Brian. Oh, wow.
That's like,
doesn't mean we don't want
like,
it,
that
Brian.
That would be funny to say, and then Andrew said it, and I'm like, well, I'm glad I'm validated now. That's good.
We're both jerks.
I play a lot of mobile phone games, and I had a really interesting experience downloading the other day, because I heard someone on a podcast talk about doing it, and it really got me to try out the New York Times crossword puzzle app. It's really well made. As far as like a puzzle interface goes, it works very intuitively. They have a lot of assistance. They have links to like when they write articles about the puzzle, so they actually get like, oh, actually this puzzle has this theme, and so you might have, it helps lay it out a little more directly if you're kind of a crossword newbie like me. But I don't know. It was cool. They even like list like, oh, this is an easy rank puzzle. This is a tricky rank puzzle. This is a hard puzzle. It's very well fully featured, and it makes me consider subscribing to the New York Times crossword subscription service.
It's propaganda, Bryce. It's how it starts.
Tally as well says, do I listen to the It's a Thing podcast with Tom and Molly? No, that's not where I heard it from. I heard it from like What a Time to Be Alive or something, from some completely different podcast. But yeah, they were mentioning it, and I was like, yeah, that's the crossword people, the New York Times. And so it's cool. And I think you can get a certain amount of puzzles for free, so it's pretty cool.
Works.
Yeah,
groovy. All right, so everybody's got picks in. Everybody's got their picks.
Yeah,
Justin, did you have one, Justin? Was it Darknet Diaries?
Yeah, Darknet Diaries.
All right, sweet.
It's been after.
Yay! He said the thing.
That's the name of the show. I love it.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.